Oh,
Yes, we did.
That's good to hear. We're going to have a very tough week ahead of us, and we're going to have to just get through it, honorable members. Again, very welcome to everyone this morning for this meeting. We are going to start with this meeting. It is 9:30. It's the 11th of October, 2022 at 9:30 on this morning. And this opening line is to welcome and you to this meeting. This meeting is officially opened. So, to the members, to the official from the Financial and Fiscal Commission, I think they're led by Dr. Tombeko Bawa, the supporting staff of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Dr. Sibongiseni Dloma, our Deputy Minister, I think, is on the platform. Also, members of the media, Parliament, YouTube streaming. We will be receiving a presentation from the following three groups. Firstly, from the Financial and Fiscal Commission from 9:30 to 11. From the AGSA at 11 to 13:30, we will have lunch at 13:30. And then from NHLS from 1400 hours. You are reminded to please also switch on your videos when you speak. I see we do have a tendency these days not to switch those videos on. So I'm really just trying to encourage you to do that when you want to speak. Before we continue, let us take attendance and apologies from Ms. Majulamba.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Present is Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Geller, Dr. Harvard, Mr. Baba, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembe Kwayo, Ms. Cherwa, Umam Sengwa, Mr. Van Staden, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I haven't received any apologies, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member, before we proceed, I want to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House that they were ruled upon. All members of Longden shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screens, which has an option that allows the members to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjection. We will now go straight over to the FST. If you can start, please start with your presentation. It is 9:34. We would still expect us to be finished by 11. We would hope that your presentation in itself is not too long. I think 9:30 to 11:15 should suffice, and we'll have time for questions and discussions until 11 o'clock. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. Indeed, good morning. And protocols observed, my name is Chen Tseng. I'm the head of research at the Financial and Fiscal Commission. And I just want like to, I don't see our Jefferson in the platform, but in that case, may I attend her apologies due to technical difficulties and others. But I'd like to also greet Honorable Deputy Minister, Dr. Duomo. I thought I saw him appearing on the list of participants. Without further ado, Chair.
Sorry for the interjection, yes. Yes, you're very welcome to continue in the absence of your chair, but I've seen two hands raised on my platform. I would just like to take those two hands. Well, it's only one hand now. Yes, it's now changed to different hands again. I'll take it in the order which I see it on the platform. Honorable Kaba, Honorable Timbekwai, and Honorable Shilisi Munya in that order. I'm sorry for the interjection.
Yes, oh, thank you, Chair. Chair, no, I was just raising to remind Chair, perhaps you may want us to adopt the agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, we normally don't adopt agendas in the portfolio committee, but thank you. We could do that. Honorable Dr. Susan Tembakwayo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I just wanted to let you know that I've got another commitment that runs the same time as with our committee. But when we are done, I'll rejoin the committee if we finish before the time. Thank you.
No, I'm covered. Safe to say anyhow, can wait.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kaba, we don't normally in these meetings adopt the agenda. Hope that answers your question. Mr. Cheng, you're welcome to continue.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member, for the warm welcome. Without further ado, let me ask my program manager, Mr. Tondo Ngozo, to try and flight the slides, but going into the essentially a broad summary of it, of today's presentation to this portfolio committee, I think I'd just like to commend as well as applaud the progress that's been made, especially just recently in May 2022, I see that portfolio committee on health has met to consider the motion of desirability of NHI. So the progress there is definitely something that's worth noting and worth applauding. And further to that, we'd just like to give our support to the progress, and as well as some other considerations, I think especially around data and integrated data management systems associated that really underpins the success of the such a centralized system of healthcare system, insurance system. A lot of apprehensions may arise sort of on and about this particular the motion, but ultimately it is the right thing, particularly given the studies and in terms of the market dynamics and the vast inequality and inequity of healthcare service within the currently what is we call a dual system, and we all know very well of between the private and public sector healthcare systems. Further work should come in support, especially around some of the regulations regulating the private sector healthcare insurances and insurance schemes, and especially those small funds. I think many of the works that will have to be done, especially with a lot of care, due care, and a very observant approach to the impact of these implementations. Hand over to Thando. I see maybe he's struggling with the slides, so I shall assist in sharing the slides. Honorable Chair members, and over to you, Mr. Thando.
So thank you, Chen. Good morning to the chairperson and honorable members and everybody else who is on the platform. Chen, can we go to slide 4? Yes, thanks. Honorable members, we started our presentation by providing a context to what has dominated the health sector over the past 2 or 3 years, that is the COVID-19 pandemic. So in this slide, we're presenting this chart that is basically showing us what has happened to the developments and as far as the pandemic is concerned between January 2020 and where we're on July 2022. So the number of things that we just want to make mention of, which members are sure are pretty much aware of, but it's important for us just to contextualize the presentation on those. So the first thing is that the COVID-19 deaths have substantially declined after 4 waves of the pandemic, as depicted in the chart on the slide. And then secondly, that in April 2022, government terminated the national state of disaster and only retained the transitional provisions that remained in place for 30 days. South Africa then experienced a limited fifth wave from late April 2022. We saw that during that period that deaths were more decoupled from the cases over this period. The imminent risk declined by mid-June 2022, and on the 22nd of June 2022, all remaining health regulations regarding COVID-19 were ended. So according to the South African Medical Research Council, during the first 2 years of 2020 and 2021, excess deaths were estimated to be 293.3 per 100,000 population. And between the 1st of October 2022 and the 3rd of May 2020, there have been 331,942 excess deaths from natural causes. And out of those, 85% to 95% of these were attributed to COVID-19. Next slide. So on this slide, continuing with the developments of the COVID-19 pandemic, we see that South Africa experienced 5 COVID-19 infection waves with over 4 million confirmed cases and 102,194 confirmed deaths by October 2022. The daily rate of both COVID-19 cases and deaths has significantly decelerated, and as of the 5th of October 2022, there were only 4,665 active cases and 7 deaths. With regards to the vaccine rollout, we note that it's a vital component in containing the spread of the virus and limiting the severity of the infections. So the 22 budget then allocated an additional 2.3 billion to buy more doses and administer the vaccines. Provinces will receive a total additional funding of 15.6 billion over the MTF period to support the fight against COVID-19 and address shortfalls in essential goods and services. Next slide. So these slides still continue to contextualize the COVID-19 pandemic. So we note that even though more than it speaks specifically to the vaccination rollout, so we see that even though more than half of the population has received at least one COVID-19 vaccine dose, the vaccination rate has severely decelerated, as shown in the graph on the left. What we also note is that youth vaccination rates, in particular. Are very low. For instance, 37% of young people aged between 18 and 34 years have taken a COVID-19 shot, and approximately 30% of those that are aged 12 and 17 have taken the vaccine. So the graph on the right shows us that there are huge discrepancies among provinces with regards to vaccine administered. Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape are far ahead of the other provinces, as depicted on the figure on the right. Next slide. So now coming to the section where we are analyzing the budget for the department. On this slide, we present a snapshot of the 22 budget, and we compare the key budget elements of the 22 and 23 allocations. What's important and what we want to bring to the attention of the members is that it shows that the total government revenue has increased by 39 billion. At the same time, government expenditure is also increased by 79 billion, translating into a higher budget deficit of 6% in 2023 from 5.5% in 2022. So the main takeaway from this slide is that we're still facing a constrained fiscal environment, and therefore all departments, including the Department of Health, have to do more with less. Next slide. So on this slide, then we're still analyzing the expenditure trends for the department. What we note is that the adjusted appropriation for the department is 65.4 billion for 21-22. Additional allocation provisions amounting to 758.7 million in 22-23 will fund conditions of service improvements to employees. Total expenditure will decelerate by an average annual rate of 1.7 from 65.4 billion in 21-22. To 62.2 billion in 24-25, in line with what we've seen in the previous slide, that even overall the fiscal is constrained. And then conditional grants account for 86.7% or 166.6 billion of the department's budget over the MTF period. Next slide. So on this slide, we see that the communicable and non-communicable disease program and the hospital system comprise of 75% of the department's budget. In other words, those two programs take a very large chunk of the department's budget. Over the MTF period, the growth in the allocation for the primary health care program exceeds 100%, while the budget for the program of communicable and non-communicable disease will decline by 10.4%. Over the MTF, baseline reductions amount to 112.2 billion in 2022-23 and 108.4 billion and 536 billion in the succeeding 2 years, respectively, speaking to the constrained fiscal environment that you started with. And then the baseline of the communicable and non-communicable disease program will be reduced by 9.8 billion of the MTF. Next slide. So in these slides, we're still dealing with the department budget analysis, but we are now focusing on the economic classification. So what we see is that the compensation of employees accounts for most of the health expenditure, compensation will grow at an average annual of 1.1% over the MTF period, limiting the ability of provincial health departments to employ more frontline staff. 7.8 billion is allocated over the MTF period to the human resource component of the human resource and training grant, which will supplement the budget that will take care of the additional doctor's post. Next slide. So this slide, we're looking at the department's budget analysis, but focusing on and personnel headcount and posts. So what we note is that the number of posts across all salary scales is declining over the MTEF period. The total number of posts declined from 1,410 in 2021-22 to 1,167 in 2024-25. And we're saying this is concerning given the critical role of health workers, but also it may result in structural weaknesses in the operational and administrative consistency, capacity, and capabilities of the department. What we also note is that the person force increased from 760 million to 769 between 2023-24 and 2024-25. However, the total number of posts over the same period is declining. This to us suggests that there is a disconnect between the headcount and the total cost of personnel within the department. Next slide. So when it comes to the departmental performance, what we note there is that the performance indicator for the primary health care program, that is the number of health facilities implementing the national quality improvement program mm-hmm. per year, indicates that 16 quality learning centers were identified to cover 80 hospitals and 64 primary health care facilities for 2020-21. What we want to note there is that there is no reference for the performance trends before 2021, making it difficult to assess how this performance indicator will significantly improve to 100 primary healthcare facilities and 80 hospitals over the MTEF period. And then lastly, we just want to note that the number of primary healthcare facilities that qualify as ideal clinics per year is declining from 1,906 in 2019-20 to 1,444 in 2020-21. This to us is concerning because clinics, as we all know, are the first point of contact for most patients. So, Chairperson and honorable members, we now move to the section where we're analyzing entities. So starting off with the National Health Laboratory Service, it provides pathology services to over 80% of South Africans, and therefore is critical in monitoring the spread of diseases, including TB and HIV. So what we note there is that the laboratory test program constitute 80% of the service's total budget between 2018-19 and 2021-2022, and 77.5% over the MTEF, growing at 2.6 annually on average from 9 billion in 2021-22 to 9.7 billion in 2024-25. The main revenue item is from the sales of goods and services. It accounted for 80% of the total revenue between 2018-19 and 21-22, and over 90% over the MTF period. So revenue growth at 7.1% lagged expenditure growth at 11% between 2018-19 and 21-22, resulting in a sharp decline in the surplus by 52%. The surplus will further decline over the MTF period by 63%. The surveillance of communicable disease program plays an important role, as we know, in containing the spread of COVID-19 pandemic and providing surveillance and advice on other communicable diseases. So what we note there is that its spending correctly saw increase from 443.2 million in 2021-22 to 508.7 million in 2024-25 to support these efforts. And as a commission, we support this increase given the critical role of this particular program. Next slide. So the South African Medical Research Council conducts and funds health research and medical innovation. In terms of its performance, we see that the number of accepted and published journal articles associated with the council is decreasing. In general, the performance as measured by most indicators is declining and projected to fall further over the medium term. The number of research grants awarded by the council was reduced from 247 in 2019-20 to 130 in 2020-21. And this to us is concerning given the crucial role of the research in informing health initiatives. The financials show that after growing by 237% between 2018-19 and 2021-22 to reach a surplus of 79 million, the council's budget deficit will increase from 19 million in 2022-23 to 31 million in 2023-24. Total turnover is 1.2 billion in 2020-21. The deficit is primarily due to elevated expenditure. We also note that transfer received and the sale of goods and services generate most of the revenue for the council. And lastly, that the 7 to 16 salary account levels account for more than 80% of the total number of posts. Next slide. So the compensation for occupational diseases in mines and works, the Competition Commissioner for Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works collects levies and controlled mines and compensates lost earnings caused by occupational diseases of cardiorespiratory organs. Regarding performance, there is a substantial increase in the number of workers in controlled mines and workers paid for loss of earnings while undergoing TB treatment per year from 4,498 in 2019-20 to 1,045 workers in 2020-21. So the number of benefits payments to commissioner makes the commissioner makes annually has significantly declined from 9,889 in 2019-20 to 7,700 in 2020-21. The commissioner aims to increase the number of benefits payments made from 7,700 in 2021 to 9,000 in 2024-25, and the number of certificates finalized from 12,000 to 14,000 over the same period. Expenditure is expected to increase marginally from 287.8 million in 2021 to 218.2 million in 2024-25. Over the medium term, the commissioner intends to improve access to services provided to mine workers, increasing the number of claims paid and tracking the claims management process. We also note that a surplus of 65,111 is projected for 2024-25 following a deficit of 139,875 in 2020-21. Next slide. So the Council for Medical Schemes, it oversees the medical industry in South Africa to protect the interest of beneficiaries and advise the Minister of Health on related matters. So the Council is currently developing a guidance framework for low-cost benefit options and finalizing the proposals for Medical Schemes Amendment Bill, which incorporates relevant aspects of the national health insurance reforms and recommendations for the health market inquiry. And as a commission, we think that this is an important initiative by the council, and we support it. Its expenditure is expected to increase at an average annual rate of 4.8% from 185.6 million in 2021-22 to 213.4 million in 2024-25. The council expects to generate a majority of or a large a fraction of its revenue, that is 95.6 or 588.2 million over the medium term through the collection of levies from medical schemes, and only a small portion, that is 3.2, through transfers from the department, which is also supported by the commission Revenue is expected to increase at an average annual rate of 4.9% from 186.6 million in 2021 to 215.3 million in 2024-25. We also note that its budget deficit has declined from 25.2 million in 2019-20 to 2.3 million in 2020-21, where total revenue is 177 million. And 201 million in 2019-20 and 2020-21 respectively. So budget surpluses over the MTF period is expected to reach 2 million in 2024-2025. Next slide. The Office of Health Standards Compliance, it monitors and enforces the compliance of health establishments, private and public with norms and standards. Over the medium term, the office plans to increase the percentage of public sector health establishments inspected for compliance with norms and standards from 10.1% in 2021 to 22% in 2024-25, and the percentage of private sector facilities inspected from 0 to 20% over the same period. Allocations to the compliance inspectorate account for an estimated 35.5% or 166.6 million of the office budget over MTF period. The total expenditure is expected to increase at an annual average rate of 1.7% from 151.9 million in 2021 to 159 million in 2024-25. The office derives its revenue through transfers from the departments. These are expected to amount to 469.8 million in the medium term. Revenue is expected to increase in line with expenditure in terms of revenue is expected to increase in line with expenditure. In terms of performance, percentage of public sector establishment inspected for compliance with norms and standards per year declined from 17% in 2019-20 to 10% in 2021, and this is concerning to the Commission because of the importance of the compliance with the norms and standards. And then lastly, we see that the financials show that a budget deficit of 10.4 million in 2019-20 has been turned into a surplus of 6.1 million in 2021. And the office is projected to break even over the medium term. Next slide. Now, the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority governs the manufacturing, distribution, sale, and marketing of medicines and medical devices to promote health, the health and well-being and safety of public by ensuring access to safe and effective quality health products. We see that its performance shows that there is an overall decrease in all performance indicators in 2021 with the percentage of licenses related to new good manufacturing practices and good wholesale practices finalized within 125 days, recording the sharpest decline from 77% in 2019-20 to 59% in 2021. And to reduce its reliance on external evaluators, the authority aims to create an internal capacity over the medium term. As a result, the spending on the compensation of employees is expected to increase at an average annual rate of 9.5% from 180.6 million in 2021-22 to 237 million in 2024-25 to fill critical vacancies. Spending on goods and services is expected to decrease at an annual rate of 8.8% because of reduced spending on contractors. Total expenditure is expected to increase at an average rate of 1.3 from 357.6 million in 2021 to 371.3 million in 2024-25. This marginal increase is due to the reduction of expenditure on the backlog project, which is anticipated to be completed in 2022-23. The authority expects to derive 42.5 of its revenue over the MTF through transfer from the department and 50.9% of its budget through fees it charges for its services. And then revenue is expected to increase in line with expenditure. Accelerating license of the license office backlog of medicine products remains a priority, which the entity aims to clear by 2022-23. The projected reduction in expenditure in the health products authorization program at an annual 21% over the medium term. This is due to revising and reviewing the business model to reduce unnecessary bureaucracy and delay. We see that compensation of employees will also decline as 25 employment contracts are expected to be terminated once the backlog clears. Revenue is expected to decrease in line with expenditure. Next slide. So, Chairperson and honorable members, the next section then we looked at the provincial estimate of provincial revenue on health. So this particular slide shows us that the provincial spending on the compensation of employees is relatively high across all provinces. The figure, what was important there is that the figure shows us that Gauteng and Western Cape, for instance, spends almost half of their total budget on cost of employees. Next slide. So in this slide, we see that the spending on conditional grants reflects increases across the board. Consequently, the total direct allocation increases from 52 billion in 2021-22 to 56 billion in 2022-23. When the national insurance grant is added to this total, we see that the total increases from 54 billion in 21-22 to 58 billion in 22-23. Next slide. This slide was looking at changes to health provincial allocation. So what we note there is that over the MTF period, 15.6 billion is added to the provincial departments of health to respond to COVID-19 pandemic and to reduce the impact of budget reductions on essential medical goods and services. Secondly, we see that additions to provincial conditional grants over the MTF period include 3.3 billion added to the human resources and training grant to address the funding shortfall for medical intensive and community service doctor. 1 billion is added in 2022-23 to the COVID-19 component of the district health programs grant to fund the continuation of COVID-19 vaccines rollout by provinces. To address a funding shortfall for medical internship and community services pause in provinces over the 22 MTF period, 745 million has been reprioritized to the human resource and training grant. This funding is made available by reprioritizing 345 million from the health facility revitalization grants and 400 million from the National Health Insurance indirect grant over the 2022 MTF period. Perhaps the most important development is that which relates to the changes that have been made to the conditional grants to accommodate structural changes to functional shifts. So the HIV, TB, malaria community outreach grant will be renamed the district health program grant. It will still be used for the same purpose, but the number of components within the grant will be reduced to two. The mental health services component and the oncology services components of the previous grant will be shifted to the national health insurance grant. Next slide. So, Chairperson and honorable members, the last section we were looking at life after COVID-19, looking at various aspects. So we start off in this slide by looking at South Africa's health care expenditure in comparison to advanced economies. So what we see from this slide is that South Africa spends relatively the same portion of its GDP on healthcare as advanced economies such as Canada and the UK, for instance. What is also worth noting is that South Africa healthcare expenditure is essentially above average for a developing economy. And then we note that there is a weak correlation between healthcare services spending and health outcomes. And lastly, that healthcare spending and delivery are highly unequal because of the separating equilibrium of the South African healthcare system and financing. Next slide. this slide, we are specifically concentrating on the national health insurance. So we note that in March 2021, the Portfolio Committee on Health was briefed by the National Department of Health about the phases of the parliamentary and then we see that there are three phases of the parliamentary public hearing process. The first phase involves visiting provinces and the report thereof, which is expected to have been completed. The second phase involves written submission, which need to be processed and analyzed internally by the Enterprise Project Management Office. And then thirdly, there were 121 oral submissions. The committee conducted a virtual public hearing from May 2021 to February 2022 and received oral submissions from individuals and various groups. And in May 2022, the Portfolio Committee on Health met to consider a motion of disappearance of National Health Insurance bill with the majority of voting for its favor. And the commission wanted to note and relay the message that we support the progress that is being made with regards to NHI parliamentary processes. Next slide. So this slide is speaking specifically to vaccine procurement. We just wanted to note that there was a World Bank loan that was approved amounting to 7.6 billion for the COVID-19 emergency response project. And that the project will proactively finance the procurement of 47 million COVID-19 vaccines doses. And then lastly, the 22 budget allocation there is an additional allocation of 2.3 billion in 2022-23 to buy more doses and administer vaccines. Next slide. So, Chairperson, we end off the presentation by just reminding an honourable members of our recommendations emanating from our annual submission for the 2020-21 cycle, and they pertain to Chapter 4, which was on sustainable financing of South Africa's healthcare system. The NHI. So there are four main points that we just want to remind the members of the with regard to the recommendations. Firstly, that we recommended prioritization in the development of an integral national information system of patient and doctor registry with real-time data to inform healthcare financing and provisioning decision using the demand-based costing methodology. Secondly, to re-examine the prescribed PHC package based on the needs of the people, refocusing from informing, promoting, identifying, facilitating, and educating activities to providing healthcare services. And then there should be an examination of the an eradication of the inefficiencies such as wastages, corruption, and leakages that result from the disparity of the two-tiered healthcare system. And then lastly, that the Minister of Health and Finance must ensure that there is an enabling policy and legislative framework aligned among all the spheres of government is put in place with due regard to setting norms and standards and is enforced with proper oversight by established committees. Next slide. Chairperson, just on this slide, we just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee that the commission noted that the transparency created by the Minister of Health and COGTA and led by the president with regards to the fight against COVID-19. And that we noted also that the government's response was scientifically led, and that we as a commission, we note and support the efforts by government to create confidence in the vaccines. And then lastly, we note that both the inequality in relation to rural infrastructure and capability as compared to urban infrastructure will require parliamentary oversight to ensure greater equity in access of the COVID-19 vaccine. Chairperson, that's the end of our presentation, and I'll hand over to our head of research for concluding remarks. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandor. Thank you, Chair. Without allow me to introduce our Commissioner, Kabulani has just joined the platform. Without further ado, if I may hand back over to the leadership.
Thank you very much for the presentations. We look forward to the further engagements, very enlightening presentations, quite short, which is good. And I will take hands from the honorable members now. Honorable Clark, Honorable Wilson, Honorable Munyai.
Chair, don't forget about me.
Honorable Ismail, yes.
And me, Chair.
Yes, so it's going to be, Ismail was actually first. Ismail, I'm going to give you first. Ismail, Clark, Wilson, Munyai, Chirwa, Gela, in that order for now, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Chair, to the colleagues, and to the Commission that is here today. I just have a few clarity-seeking, you know, questions and some opinions from the Fiscal Commission. My first point is that compliance and monitoring seems to be a continued weakness of the department and the entities. How do you foresee the quality of compliance under the proposed NHI with the current issues the department is facing in this regard? My second question, with regards to the decreased amount of clinics that qualify as ideal clinics, what do you foresee as a problem, most especially, you know, where we have some clinics that actually passed and are given an ideal clinic status, yet there are, you know, there is a major shortage of staff and space? What would be your recommendation in this regard? Thirdly, you know, what's your view on the fact that the state of the economy has changed tremendously since the inception, or, you know, since the introduction of the NHI? Would you agree with the recommendation that a more updated financial feasibility study must be taken with regard to the NHI? With regard to COVID and vaccines, you know, we know that SAPRA has extended the lifespan of these vaccines, and we know how much was spent. What is your view on how the department has actually dealt with the vaccine purchases and ultimately the success rate of vaccinations in the country? And, you know, just your thoughts on the PPE corruption and the digital vibe scandal with regard to COVID and the whole pandemic. Lastly, you know, I note you mentioned the placement of interns and ComServ, and I think you'll know that every year there's a problem with not having enough or sufficient funds. While I note that, you know, it will be incorporated here and there and it's a minor increase, you know, on the same level, we know that there's a shortage of doctors and theater nurses. Now, at the same point, you know, we know that the department actually spends millions on insourcing from outside, like the Cuban Brigade, for example. You know, how do you actually view this with regard to, you know, how we can actually capacitate within the country and use the funds of the country to actually, you know, increase the amount of healthcare workers per healthcare facility as compared to actually insourcing? That is the point of my question. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the department. I have a couple of questions, and I'm not going to repeat what my colleague has said, because some of those are also part of my questions. Firstly, how much of a priority does the National Department of Health place on reaching 70% of the COVID vaccination rate? And how much resources will be allocated to this coming financial year? And will the department have a COVID ring-fence budget? If not, from which budget will this be allocated? How did the provinces use the allocated COVID funding to combat the virus, and how successful were each province? How much of the budget will be allocated in combating load shedding next year, and in what capacity generators, solar panels, etc.? What are the reasons for the decline in the numbers of posts, and how are they being addressed? And how exactly has the NHI grant been spent up to date? And while I'm on that NHI grant, I would also like to know how Cabinet is actually, what was Cabinet's view on the NHI in terms of feasibility and costs? And, you know, Chair, if you, I'm just going to jump the gun a little bit. I mean, if you just look at the AG's report, which we're going to speak about just now, I mean, that report is like reading a horror book. And, you know, I am just really concerned is how effective is the funding in terms of NHI going to be in terms of management, fraud and corruption, and so forth. Then in 2022, the budget of 2.3 billion for vaccines to be administered, provinces received 15.6 billion in the MTF to address support and the fight against COVID, essential services and goods. What plans are put in place in terms of mitigating A, fraud and corruption, B, service providers paid on time, C, tenders are procured, open and transparently, and what kind of consequence management will be put in place? Then on slide 6, why are Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape far ahead of the rest of the provinces? And are there not lessons to be learned from provinces that are doing well to assist those that aren't doing well in order to implement those lessons learned? We also, 7.8 billion is allocated over the MTF period to human resources component. How will the department ensure that hospitals in the province, when representing their structures, in many instances, that these structures will then conform to this budget, the 7-8 billion that's been allocated? Because many times when we visit hospitals, if you look at their structures have not been adjusted for many, many years, and they're still functioning on old structures. And, you know, I'd like to know how that's going to be taken into account. And then also, will the department ensure that the accruals are brought down and that service providers are paid on time in terms of that issue as well? Slide 12 indicates that there could be a disconnect between headcount and total cost per personnel. How does that happen? How is this mitigated so that real-time budget costs are aligned to the needs that we need in terms of personnel staff? And what will the department put in place to improve the appointment of critical clinicians and nurses, and how will the training be improved? And what are the numbers of hospitals that do not comply to the ideal clinic specifications, and which provinces are the guilty culprits in terms of that? What, if you could please just tell me, what are the backlogs of the NHLS currently, and how would it affect the budget in terms of catch up? And what causes the sharp decline in surplus by 52%, and then, you know, in terms of the MTF, down to 63% of the NHLS. What then, in terms of the Compensation Commission occupational diseases of mine workers, what systems will be put in place to accelerate claims to workers, and will this be managed in that context? In terms of the Council for Medical Schemes, how many medical aides do not have low-cost benefit options, and by when will this KPI be realized? Because, I mean, it doesn't help saying we're going to address this, but it doesn't happen. I know that some medical aides definitely do have schemes in place like that is sort of subsidized by their higher plans. Then the Office of the Health Standards Compliance declines of norms and standards from 17% to 10%. What has caused this? As this is in terms of the quality of health, and it's very concerning that we have these kind of declines happening. And then the SA Health Products Products Regulation, will the 25 employment contracts that are going to cease to exist, will those be renewed? And what if they're not renewed, what kind of impact in terms of service delivery will this have?
I'll have to stop you at some stage. We have to
okay, this is my last question.
We raise some of those questions with individual entities also, Honorable Clark. I don't know if they can really answer those very specific questions.
Yeah, I just worked through the, the whole presentation.
Too much. Thanks.
Can I just give my last question, Chair, then I'm done. I mean, I just want to know, how can we shift funding from mental health and oncology services to NHI, and what kind of impact will this have in terms of healthcare? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm principally covered by the colleagues ahead of me, but I do have a couple of concerns. And I think principally around budgets. What we're seeing here, and the comment was actually made, that we have restrained budgets, but so we will have to do more with less. Now, we already sit with an absolutely 100% collapsed health system, and one can't argue with it. The amount of oversights we do in hospitals and clinics proves that day in and day out. So what we're seeing is a deceleration of budget, and it's deceleration, deceleration, deceleration. And yet we sit with a situation where the compensation is up, but the employment is down. Posts are going down, and we're already sitting with a collapsed health system, and this becomes very alarming. And you talked about the disconnect between the headcount and the cost of employment. Well, we've done some research into that, and we will have that finalized shortly. But what we are seeing is that in the provincial departments of health and in some of these entities, people are actually employed at the top of scale. There's no, appears to be no sliding scale at any of the levels. It's just that everybody is automatically employed at top of scale. Now, you know, that in itself is going to create huge problems. When the budget's not there, your entire workforce cannot be employed at top of scale. And that's a huge problem for us. You talked about the OHSCs, Health and Standards Compliance. Very, very alarming, particularly, and we've raised this I don't know how many times in the NHI, because the NHI clearly states that only people who can offer NHI services have to be registered and meet the compliance standards, the norms and standards. And yet, according to the report, the OHSC will only reach 22% of compliance inspections. And that's very, very concerning. A 17% to a 10% decline in establishments inspected for compliance is devastating. But it shows. It shows. You can see that the OHSC is not getting out there. You can see that there is a complete neglect with regards to the norms and standards by just walking in the front door of any health facility in the country at the moment. It's terribly, terribly alarming. And under those circumstances, well, then obviously the NHI cannot work, because if you do not meet norms and standards and meet the minimum compliance, it's not going to happen. My concern too, though, is, and we will be getting obviously reports from the OHSC after this, is that they are so severely understaffed. They don't have enough inspectors. They don't have the time. They don't have the facilities to do these inspections. And it shows. It shows. The health establishments are doing what they like, because there's nobody there to monitor them. And monitoring and evaluation was raised a short while ago by one of my colleagues, and it's 100% on the mark. Where there is no monitoring and evaluation, don't expect anything to be up to scratch. It's just not going to happen. The cost of employment, and I was looking at your provincial cost of employment, and I am actually now really looking forward to seeing the provincial presentations on this, because you've got, say, for instance, 31% under Limpopo. Well, I can tell you right off the top of my head, that's not correct, and I don't know where that information comes from. So I am looking forward to the provincial presentations to see what the disparity is. You compared us to Canada and UK, developing country, good budget. Well, we might be compared to the UK and Canada, but they deliver and we can't. Simple as that. We cannot deliver, despite the fact that our budget is supposed to be comparative. And lastly, the loan of $7.6 billion from the World Bank for vaccine procurements. How are we paying this back? What is its effect on health? Where is it coming from? And, you know, what happened to the huge donations we received from corporations to assist us with the COVID pandemic? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, I'm going to remind you that you're not going to get your answers, your questions answered. At 11 o'clock, we will ask the FSC to leave. So the first three have not really channeled their questions properly, because a lot of the things they had raised could have been raised to the entities which we are receiving within this week. I would ask FSC to note those which are more applicable to themselves. Please note, honourable members, we have a very tight schedule today. Thank you. Honourable Munya is next.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. The first thing I want to know, I want to ask the organisation, are they aware if they needed to make some comments on the NHI? They were supposed to write to Secretary of Parliament and participate and express their view on the NHI platform, because now the process is within Parliament. That's the first question. The second thing is that the, and I understand their mandate, by the way, the second question is that how old is this research? How old, when it was done? The third issue, Honorable Chair, that I want to raise, I just noted it. I think they made some, let me just open it. It's on slide 18, Honorable Chairperson. Let me try to look. On the slide 18, Honourable Chair, they advised that they said the Council for Medical Skills is going to develop the guidance framework for the low cost benefits options and finalize the proposal for national health insurance. I mean, where do they get this? Where do they get this views that the issues of benefit will be determined by Council for Medical Schemes? Where does that arise? Lastly, Honourable Chair, because you warned us about the issues of time, I think I agree with them on one issue, which says that the issue of wastage of resources is as a consequence of the two-tier systems, you know, of healthcare system in the Republic. That on that point, I agree with them. But then I don't agree with them on the issue. Maybe they must clarify when they say that the Department of Health and Finance must be able to ensure the development of new policy and framework, legislative framework, for what? And also to ensure that there's a good oversight. Are they suggesting that we're not doing the good oversight to the executive? Maybe they must clarify that. Lastly, on the issues of comparison with the UK and South Africa, UK already have a national health insurance in a form of NHLS. So therefore, though the population will be more or less closer, and I mean, it's advanced economy. Here we have challenges of two-tier system. Here we have a challenges of unemployment, you know, inequality, poverty, and so on, which is as a consequence of the colonialism of a special type.
How's it? Yes, it's Linda. I've had IG report.
Oh, please, man. Clerk.
Sorry.
So, Chairperson, I think let me leave it there and I'll leave everything unto you. So I'm saying they should clarify this question.
Thank you. Honorable Chairwoman, Honorable Gela, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to the FFC and thank you. Thanks to them for their presentation. I think I'm one of the people that always look forward to the presentations of the FFC, but sadly today I was quite disappointed because my reason for primarily looking forward to them is their partiality in dealing with these kinds of issues. And obviously with the preamble that they opened up with regarding the NHI, I'm finding an issue because even in their presentation, they speak about issues of accessibility, of ideal clinics declining, and in relation to that as well, right? Now, noting all those issues that they are raising and the referral system imminent in the NHI that will have people go to their nearest point of contact and not just any healthcare facility whenever they are in a healthcare situation, noting the infrastructure issues of our healthcare facilities, what is the basis of supporting the NHI if these are the issues that are still going to persist? Because the NHI does not seek to resolve these particular issues like infrastructure, accessibility, and dealing with ideal clinics, for example, right? And there's the referral system also imminent. And secondly to that, there's a continuous misterming of the NHI's abolishment of the two-tier system. This is not the case. The abolishment of a two-tier system would mean that private sector is nationalized. That is not going to be the case. The private sector still exists. It's just the government outsources and pays them for the services they give to the public sector. So I think we must be very careful of how we like misterming this particular aspect, because we're giving a view, or we are misrepresenting what this is about, and we are playing on the need for such things to actually happen in the country, and covering a neo-colonial bill such as the NHI as something that is revolutionary when it is actually not. It's going to empower the private sector. And then the third question, I want to hear from the FFC, what could be the cause of the decline of the number of accepted and published journal articles associated with the SAMRC, besides the decline of funding for research grants? I mean, this is something that really is concerning, because that is the one of the primary duties or obligations of the SAMRC, you know, to release work that is being done and that is declining. I really want to know, besides the issue of research grants declining, what could be the other reasons that bring us in this situation? And fourthly, I want to hear what the FFC's position is on CMS, on the CMS also regulating medical insurance or dealing with medical insurance issues, right, when they are for medical aid. I mean, there's other bodies or entities outside of the CMS that deal with issues of insurance in particular. You know, you've got the insurance ombudsman and stuff like that, but the CMS overlaps its jurisdiction, and it's not even legislated that they can go that far, but it still is the case. We've raised the minister as well, but obviously it continues. So I want to know what the FFC's position is on the CMS also regulating issues of medical insurance when they are legally limited to medical aid. And then lastly, I want to know what the FFC has to say about the over-procurement of vaccines. Okay, it's not lost, it's second lost. Over-procurement of vaccines beyond the demand and take-up. And I'm asking this because I note that at the end of your presentation and your recommendations or something like that, You acknowledge and you applaud the competence of the president and the minister in responding to COVID-19. Where is this competence that you're speaking about? Noting the problems that you're raising in your presentation, noting the steady decline of the functionality of the NDOH, noting the decline of performance of health entities. What and where exactly is this competence the FFC is referring to in relation to the minister and the president that isn't visible in the bettering of the healthcare system? And speaking in particular in regards to healthcare, our healthcare system is literally crippling. It has collapsed. It has collapsed, quite frankly. There's a woman who gave birth today, this morning, outside a gate of a clinic. And then we are being told by the FFC that they applaud the president and the minister when we are buying more vaccines that we need. We're buying expired vaccines. People are not taking up vaccines. And there's an issue of monopolizing the vaccine industry. What exactly is the FFC applauding in regards to the minister and the president in relation to the healthcare system? Because everything has collapsed and there's nothing to upset. They must just tell us what exactly it is that they are applauding the president and the minister for in relation to healthcare in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation from FFC. Indeed, we see a very, very progressive presentation by FFC. It's very different from last year. There's a lot of improvement, I must say. Last slide is so powerful. The management of COVID-19 by government with something that I think in your presentation you highlighted. But also acknowledging the issue that we need NHI. It's a good move for the country. I also agree on that. But also on the issue of vaccine, the issue in one of the slides that there is also improvement, Chair. But the other issue that I want to check, Chairperson, it's the issue of the departmental performance, particular on the IDL clinic, the declaring. I just want to check what was the cause and what is the plan to improve that, because IDL clinic, it was a good initiative. We saw it actually in one of the, in the clinics where I'm living. It is a good a model. But also the other issue that I want to check on the budgetal departmental budget analysis expenditure, if I can just get a clarity on the 9.8 billion reduction to the communicable and non-communicable. If I can just get the clarity on that one, Chairperson, moving forward. And then lastly, Chair, I think we appreciate the good work that you are doing. Of course, you can't satisfy all of us. We see things differently, but we know that from where we are, our health system is not collapsed. We are trying. It's more better than before. And we believe that even when we take NHI, it will be more advanced. Everybody is going to benefit equally. Of course, we understand other people are negative towards that because they understand or maybe they don't care as long as they are covered. But we think the NHI is going to assist, especially people, the poor people of South Africa, to have equally rights and also to have equal health care in the country. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We are now at 17 minutes to, so my questions will be very short. Just a bit of commendation, the fact that you've been thorough with this report. in terms of wanting to cover all of the different sections from general overview, COVID budget, post entities, etc. And we understand within the short space of time, you've tried to at least highlight a few issues from all of the entities who have still come to present to us. Then just two other matters, and I'm trying to understand your input on slide 13, your fourth paragraph where you say the number of primary healthcare facilities that qualify as ideal clinics is declining. And then you have 1,906 in 2019-20, and then 1,444 in 2022, and then you say that's a decline. So maybe if you can just give me clarity of your understanding of those numbers there. And then concerning, of course, is the decrease in the number of post-wild out population is actually growing. Number of post, as you had put from 1,410 to 1,167, as is planned in the next 3 years. We also commend the department on being able to take the interns and comsers into employment. It's been raised that there should be a different approach to this challenge of the vast number of interns which we now have been able to achieve as South Africa, which we wanted. We needed more doctors into the system. And we've been able to do that with the two joint programs of what we do in terms of training in South Africa and then training in the Dr. Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro collaboration. So yes, I think the department itself has an understanding of what it is planning on doing. Yet I would want to raise that I'm quite concerned in the decrease of the number of posts projected for the future. So you have 15 minutes exactly, Mr. Teng and Mr. Ngozo, to reply to the points raised by the honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable chair members. If I may first inquire if our commissioner Kabulani or Kawe, if you would like to say something before I jump in for the question to answer. This is part of protocol requirements, but let me jump to it in the interest of time. And thank you again, honorable chair members, for the very rapid fire. This is great. First, let me also thank the chair for actually putting it right, because these are public entities. As much as we'd like to cover, and we, as much as we obviously pointing out some of the misalignments issues within the budget from the financial point of view, because it is weird, right? It sounds alarming when financial consistency is lacking. From 1 year a surplus to next year suddenly a huge deficit. From 1 year there was a huge cash balance, and then another day investments dwindled. So these are the what we're trying to achieve within that section of the entities. But indeed the purpose of which we are not a department. And we are actually advisors to yourself, to this committee, hoping that the information we share with you today, that you will take to conduct oversight over the executive. And quickly, is not that there has been lack of oversight, not at all. Indeed, there has been a lot of work done. And that is what we were applauding. In terms of jumping to the pertinent issue of what exactly are we applauding, I think to put it, all things in perspective, this COVID-19, and we're obviously saying it from a standpoint of obviously always objective and try to be independent in all, is that we looked around the world and we looked at ourselves, and I think it wouldn't be a too flattering a term to say that South Africa actually responded to this unprecedented, it's totally external, one might argue. And in fact, on that point, the World Health has not even sorted that out yet. We approached it, I think, with a balanced, calm and appropriate manner, shall I say. Yes, going into the internal, there are quite a lot of issues, and especially to do with quality of compliance, and it certainly is concerning, I'd say, site to or initial position to start off from towards this NHI. NHI is being quite a significant undertaking. Ultimately, NHI, we're not saying that it's a panacea to this two-tier market system, by the way. Not, yes, the end result is this sort of private versus public two-tier system, but it's actually a two-tier market from a market perspective, from economic point of view. And when you have a two-tier market, invariably these other sort of participants, public sector, private sector, they are just filling the banks or filling those roles. So NHI is, like we said, it's not a panacea, but it is an attempt to try and merge or allow for the two markets to at least meet in the middle. Because if it doesn't meet where, as we put in our presentation, and also this is the thesis of the by Competition Commission on the health private healthcare or health markets inquiry, is that this equilibrium creates price distortions, and it creates what we call a lemons market. Essentially, is you have two markets, you don't know which one you actually belong to or you are accessible to. So what happens is the price then tends to, because everybody wants to make money in these markets, so they want to price it upwards, meanwhile not giving quality. And because you're not sure which one, you would always tend to go for markets, for lemons, so for suboptimal or subpar products. And that is the attempts. And it's not just, South Africa is not the first to have considered NHI. NHI has been around, and we've obviously saw the implementation in UK and Canada and other places in various forms. But two things to note there. One is that it takes a long time, all right? And in fact, UK, when it first started out, post Second World War, it was definitely not a popular thing to do. It was because of the financial implications. And since its initial sort of inception, there have been multiple amendments and changes done to it to make it sustainable. So that is a learning curve that everybody who undertakes such a big a project will have to adapt to. And in that vein, we're not oblivious or naive about it. For instance, and that's why I emphasized that a critical, very crucial, fundamental underpinning that will determine the success or failure of this is the data. And this then moves into the whole sort of quality of compliance, because only with data ensures all the other systems that works or doesn't work. You only have to see it through data and information systems. And I think to just share with honorable chair members that FSC is not naive in this regard, in that. So it's quite evident that we in general, the public sector, government, and as well as to some extent of private sector, except maybe sometimes the financial sector with their fancy apps and all that. But it's quite poor in terms of its information compliance and quite poor in managing its data systems for it to be an enabler for implementation. And this, we see it, right? Not just in health sector, we see it in procurement, and when you reach procurement is the entire public sector. You also see it in education, you see it in all sorts of other places. Whenever actually a government spends money, the data issue is very concerning. And with that, you can't, without seeing, you wouldn't know what to do about it, essentially. And that, I think, is what created a lot of wastages and leakages within the system. Another thing I think we want to address, and it seems that multiple times that it has come with the UK and all that international comparison graph, the purpose there is not to say that who is developed, who is not developed, and how and so forth. The ultimate purpose actually there is that it's not a, it's sometimes, yes, it can be a money problem, but I think we are past that money problem because South Africa, we are close in terms of how much we spend on this particular, on this sector, comparable to developed or developing economies. In fact, sometimes even beyond it. Again, we're coming back to the issue of the separating equilibrium, this equilibrium of the market, of the healthcare market. That graph there is not to say who is doing better, who is doing worse. Because if, for example, US is, most of it is private citizens will pay. Right, and that's why we see all these stories about how you know, even some Americans will come to, you know, South Africa, or will go to places, Canada and Taiwan, even to get the benefit of assistance in terms of health insurance, and because the price in the US is just, the spending and the price for healthcare is just too exorbitant and unaffordable for most people, and yet they spend the most on that graph. So it's not about it's not purely about money problem. How old is the research around FFC's research on the NHI? So this was submitted for the Divisional Revenue 2021-22. That means that we submitted it in just at the dawn of the COVID in 2020. Generally, we submit 10 months before the actual divisional revenue or the budget. In terms of the very pertinent issues in the beginning by Honorable Ismail, very poignant. I think the issue here regarding the and also very raised by various members, decreasing of ideal clinics. It is about management. It is about how the Department of Health ultimately manage and inspect, and we also got to inspect the inspectorate of the actual conditions of these clinics. And again, I think there is a lot of work to be done there. I wouldn't say it's particularly worse than previous years, because it was the department has had its fair share of challenges, and especially in terms of financial management. And generally, when you have financial management issues, public finance management issues, you have all sorts of other sectoral implementations issues associated with it, and that, again, the change there is not going to be last year versus this year, and we see immediate impact because it's to do with also the sort of management accountants, the CFOs, and those all those organizations, departments, and it's not easy. Sometimes it's and so to manage them, even if you want to consequence manage them, performance manage them, it takes time. Very last point, and the others, honorable chair members, I think I wanted to proper justice to them. We will may perhaps with a written communication of questions, we can therefore make written submissions in answers. But with regards to this instance and conserve and shortages thereof, I think it is the Department of Health and Minister of Health should really consider insourcing. So there, because in terms of healthcare practices and quality, there is quality. It's just that it's being diluted by this disequilibrium in the missing markets within the healthcare markets. And that, but in terms of training and development of our doctors, I think we are quite confident in their capabilities and abilities and the trainings that they have gone through. I hope that answers most. Apologies and for missing some. And further to that, we would like to be given, if we can have the chance of giving written submissions to the committee. Thank you for today.
Thank you very much to all of you. Yes, you're very welcome to give those written submissions to the committee. And we appreciate you coming and trying to also answer all of the questions of the members. I'm just going to speak again to what Honorable Wilson wrote on the chat. Honorable Wilson, we apply for programs. Now, programs are very tight because these are managed by the Program and Committee of Parliament, in line with what needs to be achieved at various stages of the year and in the different terms. So I would want to maybe just once mention this again, that in terms of those timelines given to us, we fit the programs in, and it's not a choice that we have of giving some longer time and others not so much longer time. Already for the AGSA, we've allocated 30 minutes. I took 30 minutes of your lunchtime and I gave it to the AGSA, understanding you're going to have many questions for the AG. So really, I want to be mindful. Otherwise, I'm going to shift those three who ask all of those number of questions. I'm going to shift them to somewhere else because, and here in particular, Honorable Ismail, please, write some questions to the through the necessary other avenues which you have so that we are given equal time to all members of the organization in order for them to be able to raise all of their
questions. Hey, it wasn't me. It wasn't me this time round.
Okay, I apologize then. Yes. But just as a matter of principle, honorable members, let us be fair and be able to equate the opportunity to everyone who need to ask any questions. I'm trying to have a look to see whether the AGSA is on the platform. Yes, thank you.
Yes, we're in.
You are here. Thank you very much. I've been looking forward to seeing who is here from you. While you're talking, you may also introduce who is here from the AGSA. And we continue with the presentation considering the limited time available today. Or if Mr. Andrés Sejo would be doing that, whoever from your side will be presenting, whoever is on the platform from your side.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Today, we have a number of portfolio committee meetings running. Unfortunately, Mr. Andrés Sejo is still in the communication portfolio meeting. However, as soon as he's done, he's then going to join. But I think for the purpose of keeping time, we can continue. I will then take the presentation together with my other colleagues on the call. Honorable Chair?
Yes, thank you. Are you going to start, Gabriela? Thank you.
Yes, permission to start. On the call with me, Honorable Chair, we have the colleagues from our office that helps us with the specific focus areas in the health sector. We have, I'm trying to check them because we have to really call them into the call. I can see that defense on the call. I think the infrastructure expert is on the call. I am hoping, yes, Corey, and I'm checking to see if our colleague from information systems they're all on the call. So, Honorable Chair, yes, thank you. Honorable Chair, from our side, thank you so much for the opportunities to present today. Our presentation, Honorable Chair, we have two sets of presentation. This is because what we do is we have the we audit the national dependent entities, and then we also then audit we also provide the committee with an overview of the health sector audit, their landscape. The audit is actually conducted by our colleagues in the provinces. So today we will also be sharing with the committee high level, and then we'll engage with the committee. And if there are any questions that we are not in a position to respond, we would then take those questions and then engage our colleagues in the province and then come back to the committee. So before I start, I am asking for a confirmation if the chair can see my screen and the honorable members.
Yes, we can. Thank you. If you can put on, are you on the slideshow?
Yes, I'm on a slideshow.
Yes, thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you so much. I think from my side, as indicated, and also Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, because the slides are very long, what we are going to do, we are going to focus on specific sections of the presentation and specific slides. However, during the question and answer session, if a member wants us to maybe highlight something on a slide that we did not cover, we can then do that. So I think with our presentation, I will not cover the mission, the vision on the slides, but I will start with our new slide that we've introduced in the current year around the accountability ecosystem. Honorable Chair and members on the call, if you recall in the prior years, we have tabled what we call an accountability a wheel, where we had recommended specific actions that the accounting officers and authorities and can then implement. And as part of those wheel, of the wheel, we also had a section around assurance providers. And for us with the assurance providers, we highlight that section because we understand the fact that at the end of the day, there is an overall bigger ecosystem that assists with the accountability within government. So this slide is the new slide that we are now presenting, and the purpose of the slide is to try to highlight the fact that there is different role players within the whole accountability ecosystem. And the message really is it's critical that each and every role players within this ecosystem, they need to do their part in order for us to see a shift in the public sector culture, as well as effectively see service delivery. So on the left-hand side, we have the portfolio, and this is the officials. We start with the officials on the ground, and these are the employees that are involved in the day-to-day initiatives of the department and its entities, and their responsibility is to ensure that those initiatives that are assisting the department to achieve its mandate, they actually execute their roles in line with the available laws and regulations and guidances. And then next to them is the senior management. Their role is to oversee what the officials are actually busy with. And then we then also have the accounting officers and accounting authorities that are supported by internal audit and audit committee. We also then have the minister on the side. On the other side, we then have the committees that really the main role is for support and oversight. And we are highlighting the different committees. We're also highlighting the coordinating departments, which is the DPSA, National Treasury, and DPME. They have a role to play within the overall ecosystem, the role of either setting the standards or ensuring that there's relevant laws and regulations that the departments and entities are implementing. We also then are highlighting the parliament, which is this committee on the call today, as well as COPA. In the middle of this block, we have the office of the AGSA, and our role is to audit so that we are able to assist with insights. And as we are then providing insights, we are able to then influence. We hope that we are going to influence with our insight that we are presenting. And then in instances where, specifically with our amendments, where there is a need for us to have enforcement, then there's enforcement. At the bottom of the presentation, we then have active citizenry. As an office of the AGSA, we acknowledge the fact that we also need the citizens on the ground to be able to feedback to all the role players within the accountability ecosystem in instances where there's anything to be changed. So this is the ecosystem that you are saying there shouldn't be a dependence on what the AGSA is doing or what, for example, the accounting officer is doing, but everybody in the ecosystem has a role to play. The next slide that we have is just a high level of how the portfolio has moved since 2018-19, but I'm not going to spend more time on it. I'm going to jump quickly to the slides on the overall audit outcomes. When we look at this slide, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members on the call, we are noting an improvement in the audit outcomes of the portfolio. And this, the main contributor in the improvement is because of the Mines and Works Compensation Fund. Previously, we have called the Mines and Works Compensation Fund CCOD. However, there's process in place where we are then changing the name. And I think one thing I want to highlight on this, on the MWCF, Honorable Chair, is the fact that currently the entity is an unlisted PFMA entity. And because it's not yet listed, there are some sections of the PFMA that we don't audit against. And therefore, the audit outcomes that the committee sees today is mainly the audit outcomes on the financial statements, as well as a few sections of the compliance. We also do not look at the annual performance reports of the entity. Our message to the executive authority is to ensure that they speed up the process of ensuring that the entity is listed on the PFMA with Treasury, so that we are then able to focus on other sections. So we do commend them for improving their control environment in the current year, but we were also cautioning them to say once they are listed on as a PFMA entity, there are other areas that we'll start looking at, and we are really hoping that the control environment is also addressing all those areas that they will need to comply with. We commend in the current year the MRC and the OHSC for maintaining the a clean audit outcome. I think they've demonstrated over the years with the good internal controls that they have and good financial management, they have really demonstrated to maintain those audit outcomes, and we really commend them for that. When we move to the orange, which is the unqualified with findings, we currently in the current year have three entities within the portfolio, which is the CMS, NHLS, and SAPRA. I will start with SAPRA. In the prior year, SAPRA was qualified mainly due to transactions that were coming from when they were MCC. For a while, the entity struggled to get it right, but in the current year, we note that they did improve the internal control environment, and then they were able to clear that qualification. However, they still have some compliance areas that they need to look at. I'll then address those in the slide that follows. When it comes to CMS and the NHLS, I think they've also been in this category for a while. And I think with the CMS, even in the current year, we've seen the fact that they had material amendments in their financial statements, and they also have a finding on compliance. The NHLS, on the other hand, I think in the slide that follows, I'll also demonstrate where they really had a number of areas where had it not been for the audit process that assisted them and for management that were able to clear it, they could have been sitting with a qualified audit opinion. So our message with the entities within this category is to say they need to ensure that the internal control environment is actually improved to ensure that they don't find themselves in the coming years regressing into the qualified opinion. The last one, Honorable Chair, is the department. Unfortunately, in the current year, the department regressed from an unqualified audit opinion to a qualified audit opinion. And I think they really were in the unqualified block for a number of years. In the current year, unfortunately, they had a qualification relating to specifically accrued departmental revenue that was relating to the recoupment of the COVID-19 vaccine. And I think what we saw with the department, as I said, for a number of years, they were sitting in the unqualified audit opinion. And we had been raising the fact that they are receiving the unqualified opinion because of some of the audit work that the auditors were doing where they had material misstatements. So unfortunately, when the control environment is not adequate, is not mature enough, in an instance where there is transaction that is not normal in the environment, that is finding the environment that is not mature enough, this is the result that we see. And we do know that management is trying to improve the control environment to then move from this. But however, unfortunately, at the time of signing, they were not able to clear the findings that we're raising. The next section that I'm moving to is the performance portfolio. I think what I want to highlight as well, as indicated, because we don't, my Mines and Works Compensation Fund is not a listed entity, we don't look at the performance of Mines and Works. So in the performance part, what we are doing is over and above the work that we usually report on Honorable Chair and members on the call, where we look at the usefulness of the indicators and target as well as the reliability of what they are reporting. We are also, as part of our strategy of culture shift, we are also trying to unpack some of the indicators and targets and the reasons behind whether they achieved or not. And for us, really, it's a matter of assisting or providing the insights to management on what we are then seeing and what they can then work on to improve the overall outcome. So for the portfolio in the current year, I think the first graph on the left shows the fact that for even though the CMS, the NHLS and SAPRA did not report any material findings in their audit report, this was due to the audit process. So what we're saying is the annual performance report that was submitted, for audit, unfortunately it had material findings. Therefore, because of those material findings, and they resulted in not having reporting any material findings. However, the NDOH, because they had findings, they were not then able to clear it. From our side, the message we're then giving is to say they need to have control to ensure that before they even submit the financial statements or the annual performance report, they need to ensure the fact that those financial annual performance reports are through a material misstatement. So the other part we are then showing on the slide is the problem for the selection for the current year, and then we are also showing the findings that we then raised at NDOH, which is specifically around the same target was not specific. Then when we then move to the performance itself, as indicated, members on the call, we looked at some of the targets that are currently sitting in the MTSF, and our aim was really to ensure the fact that these targets are actually filtered through into the APPs. And in the current year, we did know that they are filtered through. And I think in the slides of the house sector, we'll be able to indicate which ones are filtered through. So in the then slide, we are also then showing them within the entities, the percentage of achievements. And we are highlighting a few targets that we believe the fact that they are key and those targets have not been achieved, and the possible impact it has when targets are actually not achieved. So the impact overall, we are saying when they don't achieve them, the targets in the current year, it then creates a backlog because the MTSF would have set a target for the 5 years. When they don't achieve the target, it creates a backlog, and now the entity will have to play catch up to be able to then meet its MTSF targets. In the next slide that we have, it's just a number of examples within the three portfolios where we just highlighted a few of the targets that we then deem are key, and however, they are not met. We took this information from the annual report, and this information included reasons that management has provided in the annual report as a reason for non-achievement. The next section that we have I'm sorry, Chair, apparently the way I'm sharing my screen is not clear. I'll try to stop share and share again.
Can
Apologies for that. I was told that the way I'm sharing my screen was not clear. I'm trying to reshare it. I get permission from the chair if
it's
better this time. Is it better this time? Honorable Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
We can see.
Thank you so much. Apologies for that. I'm using two screens in my office, so the other one is actually appearing on my screen. So in this slide, we were then we are just highlighting the sections where these are the important key targets that we deem that and when the committee, when honourable members and the chair are having a conversation with the department entities to really get the real root causes on why those targets have not been achieved, because these are the targets that are supposed to assist their portfolio to move towards the MTSF targets. So I won't go into details. I think the one that was interesting was the OHS theme, that we do acknowledge that they are clean, but there were a number of targets that they didn't meet. And I think there needs to be a reflection on what this means going forward for the entity with regards to their role. So the next slide, like I said, is IT. I will not go through the IT. Our colleague, when we present the health sector, will talk to the IT. But in the current year, we did look at the IT within the NDOH. And there's really been limited progress, as much as some of the findings that we've been raising over the years have been cleared, but we are really realizing that the main root cause of the vacancies within the ICT department, as well as the budget constraint within the IT ICT department, they really are not able to implement some of the controls that we deem are necessary for the department to have a proper IT system. My colleague, when she presents the e-health section, she'll cover it. So when we move to the financial management, I think this is what I was referring to, Honorable Chair and members. We start with the quality of the financial statement. So the department and its entities have a responsibility according to the PFMA of when they submit the financial statement for audit, they need to ensure that those financial statements are complying with the relevant laws and regulations and the framework that's available. So they have a responsibility of ensuring that the financial statements are free of material misstatements. So when we look at the outcome in the current year, as much as we have a number of entities that did not have, that received an unmodified opinion, we are noting that for the CMS, the NHLS and SAPRA, they were able to get unqualified due to the audit process. So they had a number of material misstatements in their financial statements. However, management was able to correct these misstatements, and therefore they received an unqualified opinion. With the NDOH, I've also indicated earlier. And I think the two entities that we really are highlighting here is the NDOH and the NHLS. And I think with the briefing notes that we submitted, you know that there are a number of areas within the financial statements that they had to adjust to get to the position that they are in. So it's critical that those two entities specifically, they improve the control environment. They improve the whole preparation, the review and the reporting process of the financial statements to ensure that the financial statement they submit are free of material misstatements. When we look at the compliance with key legislation, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we then note that the three entities did not have material findings reported on the audit report. I think one thing to clarify is you might find that, yes, when you look at the management report, there are a few non-compliance that was reported, but they were not material enough to elevate in the audit report. So when we unpack the four key or the most common non-compliance areas, it was the quality of the financial statements, as I indicated in my previous slides. It was also the prevention of irregular, unauthorized, and fruitless and waste expenditure. So these are entities that they were not able to prevent this irregular. So therefore, when they were engaged in their transactions, there were instances where they were not complying with laws and regulations, and that non-compliance then triggered irregular and in some instances fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We are also then highlighting consequence management, and I think this area we did highlight it in the prior. For the NDOH, we did highlight the fact that there's a need for the department to investigate all instances of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Unfortunately, in the current year, we are still reporting a material finding in the area. It's because when we made an assessment, the one irregular expenditure that they actually investigated was the digital vibe case, and consequence management actually took place after the year end. However, with the remaining of the balance, a lot of the investigations either have not been completed or some have not been initiated. So we then have the messages for the DG and team. They really need to ensure that they perform the investigations and deal with the irregularities so that it doesn't reoccur in the future. With CMS in the current year, it was the first time in the current year we are reporting this material non-compliance, and this is mainly because they were able to investigate some, but they did not investigate all of them. With the procurement and contract management, we noted that SAPRA dealt with the findings we raised in the prior. Unfortunately, the NHLS still had a number of non-compliance that they're reporting in the current year. And unfortunately, this non-compliance resulted in the irregular expenditure that we see in the portfolio. For the NGOH, in the current year, there is no findings on procurement contract management. However, we did know that the current year, they had less a procurement. So from our side, we'll make a proper assessment on whether the control environment has changed. And I think the message we left them is that to ensure that their environment has improved so that when they do start procuring a lot in the coming years, that there is no non-compliance reported and effectively expenditure. On this slide, Honorable Chair and members, we are then showing the irregular expenditure over the years. I think one thing I want to note on the version you have, there was a slight error in the 2021 balance. We've corrected them in the slide. But what we are seeing is the fact that there is really an increase in irregular expenditure within the portfolio. There was one year, I think it's the 1920, where there was a huge condonation at the NHLS, but however, the portfolio is still incurring irregular expenditure. So that says the control environment, specifically within the procurement and contract management, as well as the within the entity, it's not mature enough to prevent. So ideally, you want the control environment to prevent the non-compliance before it takes place, and instances where it takes place, you want the control environment to be able to detect it and then deal with it necessarily. Unfortunately, in this instance, we are seeing an increase within the portfolio. So at the bottom right of the screen, we are showing the main contributors, the nature that we see. And the first one we have now, we are calling it the breach of the first pillars of procurement. But this is instances where there was procurement without following either the quotation process or the competitive bidding process. In the current year, NHLS reported 339 million. When we look at the non-compliance with contracts, this is where either they are procuring on expired contracts or they were extending the contracts without the proper approval from the relevant authorities, and therefore they have the irregular expenditure. And then there were other instances where the non-compliance is because as much as they had followed the program process around getting quotations, while they are evaluating the quotations or the tender processes, there are some parts of the SM regulation that they don't comply with. And then once again, we are seeing with NHLS having the biggest contribution factors on that. We are also noting that at the NHLS, there is irregular expenditure that is still being assessed and it's not reported in the current year to the value of 115 million. So if they actually report it in the following year, this irregular expenditure might then increase. On the right of my screen, we are indicating that this is related to the consequence management that I indicated earlier, that there is still a big portion of the irregular expenditure balance that has not been dealt with. Not been dealt with means either at the time of the audit, the investigations that were still under process or they have not started. So when you look at the Treasury regulations, they say within 3 months of identifying irregular expenditure, it needs to be investigated. So the moment it takes longer than 3 months, it means that the entity or the department does not have sufficient time to update or to some of the processes or internal control environment to ensure that there is no recurring of irregular expenditure. In our conclusion, what we then did in the current year, Honorable Chair and all members, if you recall in the prior, we had a similar slide that we presented. And in the slide, we also presented the minister and the relevant accounting authorities. And in our slides, what we are trying to highlight as the Office of AJSA is area that we think they need to work on for them to be able to improve the audit outcomes. So what we did in the current year, we then included that slide with a reflection of our assessment in the current year. And at the on the right part of the slide, we try to then highlight using red, either orange or green, on the internal controls or the parts where we felt the department and entity did not implement, which is contributing to the audit outcome that we see today. For example, with the NDOH, we did note the fact that they still do not have effective contract management units. With the SCM, we highlighted in orange because we do know there are some findings, but the findings are not material for us to then elevate in the audit report. But I think one of the areas that we really want to highlight in this meeting today is the fact that the finance the finance unit still needs to invest time in reviewing the information that is being submitted by the different units. Unfortunately, there were a number of areas that had material misstatements, and some of them they were able to clear. We also want to highlight the fact that there's still work needs to be done around performing and finalizing the investigations. The similar one we have with the NHLS, where the three bullet points that we had raised in the prior, the action plans implemented are either inadequate or the implementation is not adequate, and therefore we are seeing the audit outcomes that we see today. I would want to highlight SAPRA. So when we see the improved outcome of SAPRA in the current year, this is the instance that we indicated that they were able to clear the prior financial certain paragraph, and therefore they were able to be unqualified. So we commend them for doing that. However, they still have a qualification, a material finding paragraph on compliance, because they still need to work on the contract management. So for root causes in the current year, Honorable Chair and members, most of them, you notice the fact that it's the same recommendations that we are then presenting to the committee today. We are saying the root causes is there needs to be a proper record keeping that needs to be implemented within the entities to ensure that when they do submit financial statements, those financial statements are supported by accurate information. And even during the audit process, the information is accessible to all. We are also then saying we are realizing that the process of the preparation, review, and of the financials needs to be improved. So there's a need for the department's entities to utilize, because usually the internal audits within the departments assist the review of the financial statements. So there's really a need to really improve the collaboration with the internal audits to be able to give them the information or the financial statements and the annual performance reports in advance to allow them time to be able to then review, and to also allow time for management to make the corrections, so that by the time the financial statements are handed for audits, they are actually free of material misstatements. There is also a need for implementing daily and monthly processing controls, and this also filters to the quarterly reporting. So the message we are saying, if the entities start making sure that even in their quarterly preparation of this documents, they ensure that these efforts and the information is supported by evidence, by the time they then prepare the overall financial statements in May, then they don't really have a lot of it, because the process in year would have dealt with a lot of challenges that might arise. We are also raising that there need to also be a strengthening of the monitoring of the compliance. So the recommendations that we have given to the Honorable Minister and the team that supports the Minister, even at the entities, it's similar to the message that we had in the prior years. But our message really is there needs to be a reflection on the action plans that are then developed and implemented, because when the action plans are developed, they are developed to address a specific root cause that has been identified. So there needs to be a reflection on those action plans to indicate why are these action plans not yielding the positive results, so that they are able to unpack and deal with the areas that needs to be dealt with. In the last slides, Honorable Chair and members, it's the message that we have now combined. If the committee notes, is we really combined both for the sector and for the department. But what we the message that we are giving is that in 2021, these are the action plans, that these are the recommendations that we have given. And at the bottom of slide, we are then reflecting, as I was reflecting in my previous slides, on the progress made. And I think the message is still to say the action plans needs to be revisited. So the key message to the portfolio committee, it's our message to say the portfolio committee needs to really request regular feedback on the implementation of effective action plans, as I indicated earlier, as well as also feedback on how the department entities are actually prioritizing investigating the instances of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I think one thing that we, or the three that we added on the slides relates to them, to the sector. So I will not deal with this now. I'll deal with them in the next slide. Honorable Chair, this is the end of our slides on the entities. So I will ask for direction and guidance from you if I should quickly jump into the health sector slides.
Yes, please do. We will have a continuation of all of your presentations, and I have questions at the end.
Thank you. So, Honorable Chair and members, with the slides on the health sector, I am not presenting alone. As indicated earlier, what we do with the Office of the AGSA, because we do understand that some of these areas that we look at have are technical in nature, and as an audit team, we are auditors and we mainly focus on financial statements. We do collaborate and work with the technical units. So some of the sections, Honorable Chair members, I'll hand over to our colleagues, because we believe they're better placed to even present some of the real root causes that we note. So from the overall audit outcomes of the sector, currently today we are presenting a regression within the sector, and the contributor in the regression is the National Department of Health, as indicated in the previous slide. In the current year, we also see a picture in the sector that is not really moving as we would have loved to, but there's really a lot of work that needs to be done by the accounting officers on the ground. We do commend the Western Cape as well. They really have been maintaining the clean audit outcomes consistently over the number of years. But our biggest concern really remains for Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and KZN. We do note the fact that Free State also has been qualified, but we've noted that over the years they've improved. And in the current year, if I recall correctly, they only had irregular expenditure. So they are really on their way to get it to get a better outcome. However, when we look at Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, KZN, they still had a number of sections that they need to deal with that are actually feeding into the qualifications that we see today. Of specific reference, we have Northern Cape and KZN, and you would note that in the past 6 years, they really have been in this qualification area, and we raised in the prior that the biggest contributing factors is because there is vacancies in the key positions that are supposed to assist with financial management. And our message that we are really giving to the sector is they really need to make sure that the control environment within the financial statements unit as well really improve, so that we see a better audit outcomes in the sector. I'm not going to go to this slide. I want to go straight into the portfolio performance. So in the current year, the sector scoped in program two, which is district health services, and for NGOH, it was the NHI. So unfortunately, in the current year, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we are presenting the picture that is the same as the prior year. So that means that the sector has really not moved when we look at the performance information. So in the current year, there are about six of the entities reported a disclaimer, while the other three are reporting a qualification. So one thing I want to highlight, even though officially as the Office of the AGSA, we don't give an opinion on the AOPO, but in the current year, we try to provide a reflection that says, should the AGSA start reporting or giving opinions on this, this is the picture that we are going to see in the sector. Unfortunately, this slide is exactly the same slide that we had in the prior, where we are saying we are concerned about the audit outcomes we are seeing in program two. And the findings and the remains the same, and the root causes, as we engage with our colleagues in the provinces, for most of them remain the same. The biggest challenge that we are noting is because when they look at the performance achievements reported in the annual performance report, and they try to reconcile with sitting in the register on the ground, there is a lot of differences that they then note, and most of them then are limited to then saying, we are not sure of the numbers that are being reported. So there really needs to massive an improvement with the whole process of moving from the daily registers, weekly registers, monthly registers, registers up until it's the sector report in the annual performance report. We also in the sector are performing an analysis on whether the sector is on track to achieve its MTSF targets. One thing that we do commend the sector is when we look at the indicators and targets, including the MTSF, the sector has successfully filtered them through into their APP, strategy and APP. And they use this usually using the standardized indicators with the National Department of Health, who will then communicate with the rest of the sector that these are the indicators that they need to ensure that they're in the APP. This allows the sector to, as a whole, to work towards a specific goal, which is to meet the MTSF target. So we really do commend the sector for doing that. So the next few slides that we have are just a reflection of those indicators and targets in the MTSF. And the column under actual achievement is the feedback that we received. So this is the sector really gauging themselves on how far they are with these indicators and targets. And a lot of them, the ones that are already, they are saying either they are on track, they are in progress. So therefore, they are saying they are comfortable that they will be able to get to the targets come the end of the MTSF period. And then the ones in red, they are saying they are behind. So we included it for the completion of the slides, because I won't go through the slides. So the message. Overall, when we look at the achievement of the sector mandate, as indicated before, we are comfortable that they've actually included all those indicators in the APP. I think our challenge that we really are raising, it's on the slide that I indicated earlier, that of the reported achievements that they have, we are unfortunately unable to confirm the validity, accuracy, and completeness of the reported achievements. And this is mainly because of the limitations that we experience when we are trying to audit the information in the different provinces. And therefore, unfortunately, as assurance providers, we are not in a position to say, whatever the sector is reporting as progress towards the MTSF targets is actually valid, accurate, and complete. And really, I think there really needs to be a lot of work in the sector to ensure that that whole reporting process is improved, so that we are able to, as insurance providers, to be able to issue an opinion. We are then going to move into the focus areas that we had in the current year. So the next few slides, Honorable Chair and members, is the focus areas. And towards the end, I will then come back and present the financial viability as well as some of the financial management within the sector. So in the current year in the sector, we had three main focus areas that we had scoped in. The one was medical legal claims, and the trigger really for the medical legal claims, if you recall, Honorable Chair and members, in the prior, when we were reporting on the financial viability of the sector, we did highlight the fact that the sector is really losing a lot of money to medical legal claims. In the prior, I think we reported about $1.7 billion that was paid out from the medical legal claims, and our concern was that this is where the money that could be utilized for other services is going to medical legal claims. So in the current year, we don't scope in at a transversal level, we scoped in the medical legal claims, and then work was done throughout the province by the RA team together with our experts on the call. We also then focus on infrastructure. Infrastructure is one of those that we've been covering over the years and released, because we are concerned on the state of infrastructure within the sector. So we also have a section where we're going to get feedback on what we are seeing on the ground. We also then brought in the feedback on the e-health or the digital health strategy that the sector is implementing. One thing that we also add is we do know that sometimes in the different provinces, they do have additional challenges that are not necessarily transversal. So our colleagues sometimes do look at province-specific areas. However, those we don't then elevate in this level, they then sit in the different reports of the provinces. So when we're looking at the medical legal claims, the first few slides are just graphs that we then included in the slides, but the department really have the same reporting system. They are also using the Power BI, where as NDOH, they are able to have an overview of what the status of the medical legal claims are. So for the purpose of this presentation, we just then included for completeness sake. However, if the Honorable member committees want the details, they can request from us or alternative from the department, as we are aware that they have a similar tool to report on medical legal claims. So I will cover the part that is that is related to the NDOH, because we are trying to look at the full value chain of the medical legal claims. We looked at the involvement of the NDOH in the whole medical legal claims. We did know that in the MTSF there is a target included as well, relating to the reduction of the medical legal claims. And then in the NDOH, we looked at two indicators that they had included in their APP relating to this. We also looked at the budget and how they are managing the contracts. So the observations that we are presenting today is, unfortunately, they did not meet the targets that had included medical legal claims. However, they went and procured about 5 service providers. So the 4 service providers were specifically for the medical legal claims project, and then there was one for the case management, which is what we have on the right. And the feedback that we were getting and the observation we're making is the fact that the service providers that are actually on the ground and assisting the departments are really benefiting from it, and it's really resulting in the savings to the department. So we really commend them for that they hired these service providers to assist them, and they are saving money to the state. Unfortunately, when we look at the case management system, we do understand that the department reports that it's still on pilot phase. But unfortunately, as at year end, the system was only rolled out to 4 provinces, and only 1 province was utilizing it. So what we raise as a red flag to the department is the fact that if there's no uptake at the end of the day of the case management system, this has a possible effect of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because the system was procured to be able to assist the sector to track this claim. So if only a few provinces are actually using the system, then that will result in a fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the department. The next slide, we're just trying to highlight the province, the system the province are using. And I think if honorable members and the chair can see, I think only 1 province, as indicated, is using the system. The rest of the provinces are either using a spreadsheet to track this, which it also comes with a risk, and some of them have their own system. So I think the departments really need to reflect on this project to ensure that there is no fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because this project was supposed to assist them, the sector. So I'm going to hand over to my colleagues, Dr. Oliphant, who is going to then finalize or take through the honorable members in the committee on the medical legal claims. And then she's going to then hand over to the infrastructure expert and eventually the ISA expert. And then I'll then come in and close off the rest of the presentation. Over to you, Dr. Oliphant.
Thank you, Tavelo. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Clotilde Oliphant. I'm the health specialist in the performance audit team, and I will be presenting the outcomes that was performed by our team at the provincial level, at the provincial departments of health. So Tavelo has already given us quite a good introduction as to the rationale for the audit, and our work was conducted against the backdrop of some of the challenges that are unknown that are being faced by healthcare facilities in the public sector. These include incidents involving the unnecessary loss of life, as well as serious harm to patients that were attributed to medical negligence. The healthcare facilities also experienced challenges in the management of medical records and in shortages in the required resources to deliver services, and in particular, the availability of human resources. These challenges contributed to an increase in medical legal claims against the department, and the payments and the monetary costs of these claims that were finalized through legal processes resulted in money being diverted away from the delivery of quality and timely healthcare services, may ultimately result in a vicious cycle for the department. Our audit work was conducted at all 9 departments of health in the provinces, and we selected 3 healthcare facilities in each province. There were 4 broad focus areas that we identified. And the first audit focus area was on the management of patient safety incidents and patient complaints. So just to go through each of the focus areas quite briefly. The management of patient safety incidents. Now, just as some background, patient safety incidents are also sometimes referred to as adverse events, are events or circumstances that could have or did result in harm to a patient as a result of the healthcare services that were provided to that patient. Patient safety, the management of patient safety has become an important aspect of strengthening healthcare services globally, and the department has developed guidance that requires health professionals to report and analyze all patient safety incidents as soon as these are identified. And the purpose of reporting and analysis of these PSIs, or patient safety incidents, is for these to serve as learning opportunities that would prevent the likelihood that it will recur in the future. In terms of complaints, the National Health Act states that any person may lay a complaint about the manner in which he or she was treated at a health facility and also have this complaint investigated. Again, the department has issued guidance on how complaints, compliments, and suggestions should be managed within the department, and it's down to facility level. We found at 13 of the 27 facilities visited that there was a lack of dedicated staff or coordinating structures to oversee the management of patient safety incidents and patient complaints. We also, in terms of the, some of the patient safety incidents were also not closed, or the closure of these cases were delayed. So the departmental guidance prescribes that the investigation and analysis of patient safety incidents should be concluded within 60 days. And for patient complaints, these should be resolved within 25 working days. So some of these cases were either not closed, or the closure of the cases were delayed. Delays were also identified in the closure of patient complaints. And how this relates to medico-legal claims is that when delays in the closure of patient safety incidents and patient complaints take place, or when they are not properly resolved, these may increase the likelihood that patients affected by such cases may turn to litigation for redress. Our second focus area looks at the management of medical resources at facilities level. And with regards to medical claims, patient medical records are essential. They have an important role to play as evidence in the determination of medical negligence. We found that shortages among administrative staff that were responsible for the management of medical records were reported at 18 of the 27 healthcare facilities that were visited. These shortages had a negative effect on the management of medical records, and these are showed in the following findings. The ineffective medical record tracking systems were implemented at 17 of the facilities. And these tracking systems, the purpose is to monitor the return of the medical record to the filing or the storage area once it has been issued for use. Of course, when there's no monitoring, there's a likelihood or a risk that the medical records may become lost. At 15 of the facilities, medical records were also not always filed in a systematic or an orderly manner, which also could contribute to medical records becoming missing or lost. There were also poor practices identified in the storage, archiving, and disposal of medical records, and these shortcomings put the medical records at risk of damage. There was limited use of the recommended electronic archiving processes for dormant medical records, and as a result, the storage areas for the active medical records became overloaded, and there was limited storage space available for new medical records, which again put the records at risk of internal or external damage. We looked at how existing medical legal claims were managed within each province. These are claims that had already been lodged within a province, and found that at 6 of the 9 provincial health departments, there was insufficient resources, human resources with inadequate human resource capacity, and a lack of medical expertise to manage the medical legal caseload in the legal services directorate of the departments. These contributed to some of the delays that occurred in the finalization of legal cases. In all 9 provinces, these legal services directors would contact health facilities directly that were involved in the medical legal claims to obtain the necessary medical records as part of the management of the case. We found at 4 of the legal services directorates that there was inadequate communication and coordination between the legal services directorates and some healthcare facilities when medical records that were related to the claims were requested, also resulting in some cases in delays of the finalization of the cases. The final focus area relates to the implementation of the case management project, and Tabello has alluded to this in the previous slides, where the department planned to gazette a policy and a legal framework to manage medical legal claims, but this has not been gazetted at year end. The department also planned to implement a case management system to streamline case management and reduce contingent liability for by March 2022. However, as presented earlier, only one province has implemented the system. The system does not support the objective of the management of medical legal claims, and therefore the costs incurred on the system could potentially, as mentioned by Tabello, be viewed as fruitless and wasteful. So the following three slides, Tabello, were just included to illustrate the impact of the legal claims on health departments, looking firstly at the financial impact of litigation and claims on the sector. We won't go into the detail of the slides, but just maybe to mention the bottom line that shows that 15,000 legal claims valued at 125.3 billion rand were lodged against provincial departments, of which 96% were attributed to medical legal claims. And that the departments paid 855 million over the period. The following two slides, again, simply some examples, if members want to read through, of the impact on available funds for quality healthcare. And then we're just looking at some examples that occur when the departments have to pay. And in the final slide with some examples, we're looking at cases where three provincial departments of health made payments in relation to medical legal claims. Most of the payments were made as out of court settlements. Of note, in the examples from the Eastern Cape, there were no supporting documents or medical records could be found as evidence to support the department's case, which in many cases resulted in the department having to concede and settle these cases. Just in conclusion, I will hand over to my colleague Corey Pretorius, who will present the infrastructure focus area. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Corey Pretorius. Infrastructure is something that AGSA have been looking at for many years now. We report on this matter continuously. Unfortunately, it's an area within the health sector where we really see very little improvement. The focus of our work was on the health facility revitalization grant, a grant of 6.4 billion annually. So it is quite a large volume of money going into this aspect. Our scope was to look at 27 projects. So we basically looked at three projects per province. And the total value of the work that we looked at was about 4.2 billion. We also spent some time on following up findings from prior years. And in that regard, we were looking at 22 of the projects. On the right-hand side, you can see the kind of things that we were looking at. We're looking at the project planning, the implementation, the project management, and then the commissioning thereof. At the bottom, there's just a summary of where we saw the findings. You can see that in most provinces, there's findings when it comes to project implementation. You can see that time or delays was a big issue, with most of the provinces showing findings there, as well as issues of cost and build quality. Thank you. If I look at the summary of our message, then we can see that departments in the sector are struggling to do adequate need assessments when projects are in the planning phase, when projects are starting. And the effect is that they cannot provide timely and effective access to the finished facilities. You know the saying that if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And that is typically something that we see continuously. We also saw that there was ineffective project implementation and a lack of consequent management to rectify the problems and encourage accountability from both the client and the contractor. So the effects thereof is that they cannot drive progress and identify and deal with the roadblocks and issues that might arise during execution. We also saw that progress remains slow and projects already delayed incur further delays in terms of time. There's an increase in costs and financial losses, especially where the delays are contractor, where the client department and the implementing agent delays giving proper instructions, submitting planning documents, or even paying on time. Then we saw a lot of poor workmanship, quality issues that was attributable to contractors, and we also saw that reaction on identifying these issues were very, very slow to force the contractor to correct these. We also saw some other issues that got an impact on the timely service delivery, and that was issues like community actions and then protest actions. By following up on the prior year findings, we confirmed the inability of some of the accounting officers to implement a responsive action plan to address these findings. This is indicative that the AG's call for action have not been taken seriously, and therefore we have these repeat findings. Thank you, Tabelo. Just very briefly, if I look at the root causes, identifying the root causes are always one of our key drives, because if we can pinpoint why things are going wrong, it can be rectified. So what we saw was there was a lack of adequate coordination by the departments with other government institutions such as municipalities and implementing agents. Typically in a health environment, you have the Department of Health, who uses the Department of Public Works or other implementing agent to implement the project on their behalf, and the municipalities need to contribute by providing the bulk services that is required for the hospital or clinic to function. Then we see that there was a lack of adequate enforcement of action plans or non-performance challenges to ensure that concerns are addressed through the appropriate interventions and actions. There was an over-reliance on external consultants monitoring and reporting on the quality and the progress of the key infrastructure projects. Then we also saw a lack of project management skills at departmental level. With such a reliance on the professional teams implementing agents that are appointed to manage these projects. These professional teams or implementing agents are not effectively managed by the departments. So the departments are really not able to hold these other institutions to account to make sure that proper work are being done on their behalf. Because it's the Department of Health whose budgets are being spent, so they remain accountable. Then we saw inadequate consequence management, and we saw a lack of accountability. We saw problems in enforcing deliverables, in ensuring that services were rendered, monitoring the different actions, and approving variation orders and other important documents on time. Thank you, Tabelo. Now, if I look at our recommendations, improve the planning process of projects to ensure that the correct needs are identified and addressed, manage the projects adequately, address deviations from the contract or poor performance in terms of the contract, implement the penalties or terminate immediately once the deviation is discovered. The construction contracts allow for these kinds of severe actions to be taken, but unfortunately, very often those are not taken timely. Pre-prioritize completing of projects and avoid the risk of unnecessary time delays and cost escalations. Improve the project management and monitoring to ensure that all instances of poor workmanship are promptly identified and rectified. And the last recommendation, AGSA compiled a preventative control guide on infrastructure in the prior year. In compiling this document, we drew on our past experience with infrastructure audits. And this guide provides very valuable information and direction for leadership and even oversight bodies like yourself. Thank you, Tabelle. I'm handing over to Portia now.
Thank you, Corey. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Portia Nguna, and I am the ICE Audit Specialist that has supported Tabelle and team on the audit. And before I go into the e-health, I'd like to pick up from where my colleague Tabelle has left off in terms of the IT audit outcomes for the department. Can we elevate IT given the critical role that it plays in supporting some of the health services undertaken by the department as well as in the provinces? So because of that, we have assessed the IT control environment as part of the broader control environment in the department. And as my colleague has indicated, we do see an IT control environment that is rather concerning. So as part of our audit, we looked at IT governance and we looked at some of the controls implemented as part of the IT environment. And Chair, we'd really like urge on encouragement management to place greater focus on the IT governance, looking at those IT governance structures, ensuring that they are implemented in order to provide the appropriate oversight on IT initiatives in the department. And also looking at action plans to ensure that the IT risks that we have identified are also addressed. So I will now go into the health sector, Chair. And as part of our sector, we assessed the progress made on the National Digital Health Strategy. So some bit of background was that the department or the sector had embarked on implementing the e-health strategy between 2012 and 2019. And in 2019, the sector progressed from there to implement the National Digital Health Strategy. So in 2019, Chair, we had assessed the National Digital Health Strategy, or rather the e-health strategy. And even there was concerns that we had raised. So Chair, before I really go into providing the observations that we have noted, I would like to also commend the department on the progress that they have made in making use of technology. I think we've seen recently in terms of the COVID rollout, how they were able to quickly implement systems that really supported the COVID management and vaccine rollout. However, Chair, the progress made in the implementation of the e-health and now the digital health strategy remains concerning. We highlight these two strategies, Chair, because they are critical in achieving some of the strategic objectives of the department and particularly looking at the NHI. Some of the observations that we've made, particularly around the National Digital Health Strategy, was the lack of root cause analysis done to assess the failures on the e-health by the provinces. So again, because the department had implemented e-health and then progressed to the National Digital Strategy, it would have been ideal to assess what has gone wrong as part of the e-health and then take those learnings into the implementation of the digital health. So without this assessment having been done, it's as if the department is really going cold and neglecting some of the learnings that they would have noted previously. We also continue to see the lack of governance structures to exercise oversight over the implementation of systems generally in the province. So So how it works is that in the provinces, there are meant to be oversight structures that are meant to meet in support of the digital health strategy. And we noted that a lot of the provinces, these committees were not meeting. We also assessed the National Digital Health Strategy, and we really noted that it's broad and doesn't really provide the guidance that would allow the sector to implement the initiatives specifically. We also noted that the province did not develop their own digital health strategy. So what was meant to happen is the department has approved the National Digital Health Strategy. Now the provinces were also supposed to take what is in the digital health strategy and develop and approve their own strategy. Budget continues to be a significant constraint in the implementation of the digital health and also in the implementation of a lot of IT processes in the province. We also note that there were initiatives for infrastructure supporting digital health were not planned or not in place. In terms of the impact, Chair, particularly around the implementation of the digital health strategy, is that we're highlighting the potential impact that it could make on the infrastructure and systems required for NHI. And of course, what we note is that a lot of the provinces are moving ahead and implementing systems that are not necessarily informed by the digital health. So in future, Chair, we're highlighting a risk where we would have various systems that could potentially not speak to each other as a lack or due to this standardization or lack of implementation of the strategy. Chair, I'd also like to touch on some of the work that we've done generally in the sector around the health systems. We were able to assess the availability of systems at the provinces, and we assessed this particular item again because IT or the continuation of IT is critical in providing some of the services. So we wanted to see what processes are in place to monitor or take note of systems that may have been impacted. So what we note is that availability of systems was really not monitored as much. The provinces were not proactively monitoring systems, and as such, if there is a disruption of any systems, there isn't really processes to proactively identify those services. We're saying this could obviously have an impact on some of the health services provided. We also continue to see or note the lack of integration of health systems. As you would know, Chair, integration of systems is a key feature of first the e-health strategy and is also a significant feature in the National Digital Health strategy. So in terms of the impact, we are saying that the lack of incident and problem management may negatively impact on health services that are dependent on IT. And also in terms of the lack of integration, we're saying, Chair, that information management and reporting to enable management to make decisions and plan properly is impacted due to the lack of system integration. Thanks, Tomelo. In terms of the root causes, Chair, we would like or we have noted that the minimal progress made on the implementation of the strategy was due to the department directing a lot of its focus towards COVID. The National Digital Health Strategy was approved in 2019 and shortly afterwards COVID came. And like I said, a lot of the efforts had to go into that. But over and above that, Chair, we really continue to note the impact that minimal resources and IT budgets has, not only on the implementation of IT, but on provision of IT services generally in the provinces. And of course, as indicated, the minimal oversight over IT processes is also a key root cause to the findings that we've noted. In terms of our recommendations, Chair, we're saying that the department should go back and review the digital health strategy, review the initiatives and timelines that are contained in the strategy, and see how they could update those for implementation in future. We also urging the department to review some of the IT budgets and see how they can support the IT environment in terms of the provision of IT resources as well as IT budgets. And we also encourage the oversight structures to start playing a more greater role over IT in the provinces. And that's it from me, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Tavrina.
Thank you so much. I will then take through the Honourable Members and Honourable Chair with the last segment of the presentation. We are aware that it's been a while that we're presenting. So the last part that we are doing from a sector perspective is the material irregularities. Office of the MGSA, I think 2019 when we started the implementation of the MI processes, we were following a phased-in process, and not all department entities were actually part of the process, but within the sector, we are at a point where all departments are part of the MI processes. And I think I'm not going to go through the detail of what an MI is, because I want to allow us time to also have time for questions, but I think where we are, one thing we wanted to highlight is when we do identify a possible material irregularity, there's a lot of work that gets done on the ground by the team to ensure that when we eventually do report a material irregularity, it's an amount that is confirmed, and we are confident with the amount or the non-compliance that has taken place. So we do note that we have sometimes get feedback that maybe the honourable members and the committee was expecting a lot of MIs in the sector, but there are a lot of MIs on the ground. Is that as an office of the AGSA, we really invest time in making sure that we get the process right, so that by the time we report them, there's also work to be done by the different accounting officers. So this slide just identifies the different steps that gets followed after a material irregularity has been notified. And I want to highlight that. I think what I wanted to highlight is when you look at the next few slides where we highlighted the number of material irregularities within the sector, a lot of them are still sitting under step one, which is instances where we have issued the MI and then the accounting officer has indicated that they are dealing with the MI. So there is either investigations that are taking place, or in instances they are opening a criminal case against the perpetrator. So a lot of the MIs within the sector are in that category. So from our side as the Office of AGSA, on a yearly basis, we do then follow up with the action plans to see if the action plans that management is implementing, account of state implement, is actually adequate. And in instances where sometimes they're not adequate, we can then move to either a referral or a recommendation. So there is, I think, one material irregularity that it was referred to a public body, and I think there was one that was also we issued a recommendation. I would just maybe highlight a few, but when we observe the material irregularities within the sector, a lot of the times, it's material irregularities that are coming because the sector is not paying the service providers on time, and these could be the contributing factors of the financial strain that we've highlighted within the sector. So in instances, for example, if it's a construction project and the contractor is on the ground but they're not being paid on time, the contractor then charges spending time, which then results in a loss to the sector because that money could have been utilized elsewhere. So we have a few that relates to construction, and I think it links to the presentation that my colleague Cory was making, that there needs to be work that needs to be done within the construction to make sure that they catch up on some of these projects, because a lot of them have been outstanding for a while, because as long as they keep delaying the projects, there is losses that are incurred. We have seen a few that came through the COVID-19 processes where procurement was done even above the market price. I think there was one on and specifically GP and KZN, and then there were somewhere in instances where they are paying for medical legal claims, they don't pay on time, and therefore their interest. So a lot of, if we can categorize the MIs that we are releasing, a lot of them falls under the interest and penalties category of instances where, because they have financial issues and they're not certain things on time, they are then charged interest and penalties. I will not go through the rest of the slides. I think we included them so that the honorable members and chair can then look at them and then we can engage. The other thing I wanted to mention here, all these material irregularities have been reported in the audit reports of the specific provinces, and some of that have more detail than what we have then included here. I'm going to move to the financial management and compliance section. Similar to the portfolio, we also looked at the quality of the financial statements that is presented for audit. And I think in our instance, only two entities did not have a material finding, and this was the Western Cape as well as GP. The rest of the entities had reported material misstatements, and therefore only two were actually only then able to get the unqualified audit opinion, as I indicated earlier. The main qualification areas within the sector is around PPE. There is a lot of irregular expenditure, contingent liabilities, as well as accruals and accrued deferred revenue and compensation of employees. So the message is similar to what I was saying earlier, that they really need to improve the control environment around the reporting, preparation and reporting of financial statements. We also included an illustration of the impact or possible impact of the on the financial health of the sector. We did have a similar slide in the prior where what we do, we analyze the current accruals and payables not yet recognized in the financial statement. We also look at the claims against the state that is reported in the financial statement and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we see what impact does that have on the sector itself. And on this slide, what you also do, we also compare it to the next day appropriation. One thing for us that is very critical is when we look at the accruals and payables, these are committed invoices or services that were rendered that were committed as at year end. They total 16 billion, which means that because they didn't pay them as at year end, they are then going to pay using the next year's allocation. And already the sector really keeps, what the message is saying, the sector really keeps borrowing from the future to settle the current service delivery. We have seen in certain instances where some of the service providers, because of the delay in payments of invoices, they start charging fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That's why we are seeing the amount we see. And in certain instances, I think it was one or two provinces where some service providers even withheld services because they are still waiting for payment. And this is having a direct impact on the service delivery on the ground. The claims against it said, even though we do know that this is the amount that they received, I think what is worrying the sector is they keep increasing. And in the current year, when we look at it, it's sitting at 95 billion, which is 90% of the next year's appropriation. So our message is to say, if these are successful, unfortunately, it results in medical legal claims, and therefore it then results in money being redirected from service delivery into these claims as indicated in the section earlier. Looking at the compliance with laws and regulation, only one province did not report findings, and this is the Western Cape. The rest of the provinces had different findings. And I think in the table, we are indicating instances where there was procurement and contract management, as well as the quality of financial statements as indicated earlier. And then we also had a number of provinces that had findings around consequence management. So it's looking back to what we are also seeing in the portfolio, that there's a need for the sector to really investigate these cases of irregular and fruitless and hold people accountable as required. When you also look at the procurement and payment, we also try to unpack some of the issues around procurement and contract management. And we note that a lot of the provinces have reported findings around uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes. This is where they are either not getting sufficient quotations or the tender process was not correct. And therefore, it was a non-compliance that resulted in irregular expenditure. There were a few employees that were identified within our processes where they were actually doing either business with the state, and there were a few that did not declare. I'm going to then move to the irregular expenditure. So when you look at the irregular expenditure within the sector, so in the current year, the closing balance was 70 billion, which is also concerning because of this 70 billion, because there is limited investigations. consequence management is not taking place, and hence we keep seeing an increase in the irregular expenditure balance that we see. The top contributors of the current year irregular expenditure was KZN at 4.6 billion, followed by Gauteng. And when you look at the nature, unfortunately, honorable chair members, these are the findings we raise on a yearly basis. These are the findings, so we're saying there's procurement that is taking place without following a competitive bidding process or quotation process. In instances where they do follow, in some of the evaluation process, there are some steps that the sector is missing while they are doing this, and also they have findings around contract legislation on contracts. So it's rather unfortunate that this is the similar non-compliances we've been raising over the years, and they're still taking place within the sector. So there really needs to be an improvement of the control environment, even within the procurement space. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we see in the current year, the closing balance is about 837 million. Once again, there needs to be investigation to what is creating this fruitless. We do know that earlier, like I said, interest and penalties is the biggest contributor. And what we see is if the control environment around how things are being managed within the sector is not improved, it is also starting to filter even into the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, where money is being lost to the sector that could have been used into service delivery. The root causes and the recommendations, when we do reflect on what's sitting in the sector, it's very similar to what we reflected on the portfolio, and I'm not going to go into detail, but I think our overall message is every year when we raise findings, the audit process such that for the finding, every finding that we raise, management indicates the action plans they are going to then develop and implement. And for us, seeing the repeat finding, it really requires the sector to also reflect on those action plans that they have then developed over the years to ensure that and assess them if they are really adequate enough to address the root causes that we have included in all the findings that we raise, and instances where there needs to be an adjustment, they then adjust. So that is overall our message within the sector to say if they reflect on the action plans that they have committed to do and ensure that these action plans are actually then addressed, and we are hopeful that then we might see a different picture within the sector. I will also not go through the portfolio committee message because it's similar to the one that we had on the slide. I think from our side, to my side, I don't know, I think Mr. Scott is on the call. I was going to ask him to just have closing remarks and then hand over back to you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Vero, and thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. So from our side, apologies, Chair, for stepping late into the session. As you would appreciate and be aware, there are a number of sessions running at the same time. So I was also assisting some of our colleagues at Environment as well as at comms and water. So Honorable Chair, from our side, I think it was quite important that we take both presentations. We do appreciate that. It's quite a bit of a lengthy presentation, so I won't be long. But for me, I think if there was something that I would really beg the committee to take away from in terms of this presentation would be our absolute concern with regard to the lack of progress insofar as it relates to the performance information reporting in the sector. As Tabero indicated earlier on, for us the cause of concern is informed by the fact that even the program we selected is the one that we deemed key and material and significant to the sector, which would be program two, where bulk of the budget is allocated to and where we feel that you'd get the most bang for your buck in terms of your strategic intent. So if the portfolio is not able to always be in a position to report on its performance insofar as that program is concerned, it then would beg some questions with regard to our ability then to, as an assurance provider, to support the portfolio and the sector in providing the necessary required level of assurance on the reported performance information. And then obviously that poses certain questions from the portfolio committee's point of view in terms of then some of the decision-making that you have to do as a sector, all the oversight structures in the sector in terms of some of the critical decisions to assist in the critical service delivery in this particular sector as well. And then ultimately, Chair, would just be for the portfolio committee to also continue keeping an eye and monitoring the situation insofar as it relates
relates to medical legal claims and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in the sector, because we do appreciate the fact that our economy is quite tight and money is too tight to mention, and we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where we are in a position where we are not able to achieve some of the objectives that we would want to, because we don't have sufficient budget available. But yet, in the same vein and breath, we have other avenues within the scope of our business where money is actually bleeding from the system, where we could be doing and implementing certain initiatives to assist and curb those and have those funds available to maybe procure equipment, increase our capacity or increase our skill set in certain critical required fields. So that's really the message for us at this particular point in time, the two overarching messages insofar as it relates to the sector. Insofar as it relates to the PFMA audit, I'm quite happy, Honorable Chair. I did mention when we're doing our preparation work and even with our engagements with the executive authority that we are confident that the department, the national department, would be able to turn around the situation. To that effect, we have actually also committed to assist them by doing an interim audit as soon as we finalize here and they are ready and available for us. We will then do an early engagement on those particular reimbursement programs and transactions. We are aware that they are working very hard in the background trying to finalize those reconciliations and process and have the supporting information ready and available so that the Office of the AG can look at it. So we are confident that hopefully then they will be able to clear this. This is not going to go away, at least for the foreseeable future, for the next year at least, as the information starts rolling in and being cleaned out and sanitized. We do expect that some material balances will still remain insofar as it relates to the reimbursement vaccine program. On the other spaces, it's just some of the other institutions that must just really improve on the remaining financial and performance management disciplines, especially insofar as it relates to the procurement space, for us to really then gain the benefit of them moving towards the clean audit. Other than that, Honorable Chair, we will now take questions, comments, or inputs in the presentation. Once again, we really do appreciate your patience and indulgence. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Andries, and your whole team. Tabelo was carrying most of this. We appreciate you coming to give us this presentation. Honorable members, I think we're going to take just a 5 minutes comfort break, please. We'll be back at 25 minutes too. You'd have heard that I had allocated more time to the AG today to 30:30, but I think we should just do that. We'll be ongoing. Don't switch off your devices. We will be back at 12:35. Thank you.